You know, I was thinking a lot about McKinley and Denali about this lesson, and even though I keep teasing them about finding railroad spikes, I don't know how much they've even seen trains in their lives, but even when I was working on it yesterday, I was going through their minds, like, they'll really like this. I've told several lessons and stories about the railroad that I've, because of the book that I had worked on with a gentleman from Port William, and even though it's kind of been an on and off fascination of mine since I was a kid, I still have the same train set I got when I think I was 6 or 8 years old. Got most of the cars for that at home, but I never was like my brother Levi, who would get his train sets out, and he actually went with some of the conductors in North Dayton off of Stanley Avenue, going and riding with them and going places with them as they made their trips up there. So as out of the two of us, he's definitely got a little bit of a more depth of knowledge about things like that. But when I was thinking about things that we could possibly do today for with regard to thinking about spiritual things, this idea seemed to be a useful one for us. And it kind of came up with some things that I was dealing with over the last couple weeks. So as you see, the title there is Catching the Train, but we're going to start off on talking about timing. And because everything that we're going to look at today, both spiritually and physically, as the story that I'm going to show you, is all based on timing. As you know, with a train, just like today, if you want to catch a plane or a taxi or you need to meet somebody for dinner, you need to be at school at a certain time, or you need to be at your job at a certain time, it's all based on timing. Timing is pretty much integral to how we work our lives. We wake up at a certain time each day. We typically go to bed at a certain time each day and those kind of things. So time is a huge factor with regard to humans. And we've talked about this in the past. With God, time is irrelevant. Time is just a thing that is based for us. It's a measurement that we have because God is eternal. He has no start and no end. And so time with Him is not something that we can understand. But when we read, I think even just last week when Kyle was talking about one of his lessons, he was mentioning about how the stars were put into the sky to mark seasons and times and those kind of things. We see in history, if we watch the History Channel or we watch any shows about Egypt and the civilizations of mankind around the world, almost all these ancient civilizations are all based on trying to measure time in some way. Egypt especially, down in South America, the nations around the world, often they would put their buildings or their temples and align them in such a way that they matched alignment with the stars so they could know when was it going to be time to plant in the spring, when was it going to be time to harvest, when was winter going to come, and those kind of things. So time, just keep that in the back of your mind, is a really important part of our lives and is important with these things we're going to be looking at today too. Kyle talked about taking a cool picture last week and having some trees in the background, and he said that because of the darkness of our projector and with our screens there, it's kind of hard to see, but for my presentation, what you see up on the screen is not too different from what I saw myself. I live, I've got about a half acre on my property. It goes out, what you can see there is actually the above ground pool with a deck on it. And when I look out my bedroom window, if I look straight out there, that's what I see with my camera. And that's not what I'm looking at. I'm not looking at my neighbor's swimming pool and their deck back there, but I'm trying to see something past that. Because I know for sure there is a railroad track back there, and I found a couple times I've gone back there and watched, and what I see is this transition of darkness to a suddenly starting to see a little bit more light and a little bit more light, and usually accompanied with that comes a rumbling. I was even looking at the song that Glennon started off with us today and was talking about the rumblings of thunder, and I was trying to work that into the lesson, but it really didn't go very far. But that idea of what we feel, our senses are an amazing thing that God has given us, and just amazing. If you close your eyes, you can often walk in a place, and just by what you hear and what you smell, you can tell exactly where you're at and what's going on. You don't need to see, even though that's helpful. Other times, you might have your ears blocked, but you can see what people are doing. You can see what's going on, and you pretty much still have an idea of what's going on. Sometimes we can close our ears and close our eyes, and just the sense of smell can tell us, I think I'm by the ocean. I smell saltiness in the air. Or Mom or Grandma's making dinner. I smell that. That smells like my favorite food. So even though part of our senses are blocked, we are still sensitive to our noses and our senses there. Other times I may have all those things blocked off, and in the case of this situation, your body can feel what's going on around you. So sometimes, even though for probably the first month that I was in the house, I would hardly ever see a train, and I kept hearing people say that they were often on those tracks behind me. But I was always in bed, and I never heard them. I went to bed. When I go to sleep, I pretty much go sound to sleep very quickly. But I have had a couple of nights, probably a few weeks ago, that I stayed up a little bit later. And I start nodding off in bed, and I start hearing this, and it was just, I could feel it on my body. The house was moving with it. And apparently, I had just fallen asleep and missed those things. So I may have not been able to see what was happening with my eyes. I probably could have closed my ears and not hear it. My nose was useless at that point, but my body could feel something was going on. So again, we're thinking about our senses, and we're thinking about time today. So I caught this the other night, and you can see on there, I was just telling you there, I just see blackness. I had to adjust that on my computer, so that's taking a computer software program in Photoshop, which I use for all my imaging, and adjusting levels. That means I'm taking the mid-tones or the gray areas of the picture, and I'm making them brighter. So hopefully you can see up on the board there, you can see between that picture and that picture, you can almost see a little bit of background on there. The monitor on the back wall looks great there. You can actually see some trees starting to light up back there. So if I keep stepping through this, this is actually going through a time series of what I was able to see out the back window. So I just had my camera right up against the glass. A tip for you, if you ever want to take a picture of something and you're trying to look through glass and all you get is a reflection or the glare from the glass, put your camera all the way against the glass and the glare is gone. So that's something that I found out that I can do there. But you can see the controls in the bottom of the screen there now. So as I'm going, I'm looking out there. Prior to this, I had heard the train whistle a few times, so I got up out of bed, I put my camera up, and I stood there for literally a minute or two, and nothing happened. So I was like, this is ridiculous, I'm going to bed. Lay back down, I started hearing train whistles again. I'm like, I got to catch this, this would be really cool. So I went back to the window, another 2 minutes, a video of nothing on it. I'm like, this is stupid, I'm going to bed. Lay down one more time, I hear the train whistles again, and this time I feel that whoa, 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 whoa. I was like, okay, I can get this one. Now, I was capturing these things not for this lesson, but it was part of working into it. So we go back here to where we started. Go back to the first picture there. We just got the swimming pool we can barely see. We adjusted the same picture, so it's a little bit lighter. Now it's starting to get brighter and brighter, and now you've got this really bright light off to the side there. And now what you can actually see, there you can see a bright light. It looks like it's just about to come out from, there's actually a barn between there where that light's cut off there. But for that next frame, you can see the headlight of the train starting to peek out there. There we go. Okay, so now you can see the front of the train coming by there. Now, there's not light on the train, there's just light coming from the train, so you can't see it very well. But as it goes by, you can see there's one locomotive, there's a second locomotive coming out, and right there is the beginning of a third locomotive. And what I found out, even though I was sleeping at night, sometimes there was three and four locomotives pulling trains of anywhere from 20 to 100 cars going by my house at night. In the old days, you would probably be waking up and not be able to sleep with that, but the modern trains are pretty good about that. So as we go through here, we get to the last bit here, and then I've started lightening this up. So I wanted to show you what it looked like the next day. So that's nighttime. That's just looking at the neighbor's light coming on his pool. But if I go and overlay that with what I had taken a picture of the very next day, that's the exact same scene that I was seeing the night before. There's no train there, but that's the same picture that we back up to here and see. So that's what was going by. Now, I'm showing you all these pictures there because as we started off with talking about, timing really is everything. You hear that pretty much all your life. I wanted to take that picture. I wanted to get that series of videos there, so my timing had to be appropriate. Otherwise, I wasn't going to catch that train. And it's kind of that way for all of the things in our lives. I want to be on school. Timing is everything. I want to get to my doctor's appointment. Timing is everything. In our day and age, not a lot of timing is forgiven. If you don't make an appointment on time, a lot of times the doctors or the people at the front desk will say, I'm sorry, the doctor's busy, they can't get you, please come back in 5 months, even though it may have taken you a year to get that appointment. So it's really important that we get to timing. So we look back at timing, another interesting thing also has the railroad connection here. We'll look at that. I'm going to read a couple of our articles here, and I've been going back to Wikipedia, not for its knowledge base, but just for its convenience. As you see on the board, it says standard time in the United States. A map of U.S. time zones, which I'll show you in just a moment, between April 2nd, 2006 and March 11th, 2007. The current situation is very different in that six Indiana counties have since moved from Central Time Zone to Eastern Time Zone, and I think this is probably a little bit dated of an article. The history of the Standard Time in the United States began in November 18, 1883, which is right around almost the very top end of railroad development in the United States and in Canada. When the United States Canadian Railroads instituted Standard Time Zones, before then the time of day was a local matter, and most cities and towns used some form of local solar time maintained by some well-known clock. For example, on a church steeple or in a jeweler's window, the new standard of time system was not immediately embraced by all. And some of you may have been in places that you grew up in, kind of had people maybe talk about this, but I think probably all of us have grown up at an age where time has always been there and it's something that we expected. But just imagine going back in time to where people didn't have a standard time setting. You couldn't call time and date and find out exactly what the time was. You didn't have a computer to find out exactly what the time was. We've all probably got, I've got a watch that loses about 5 minutes every month. So if I just kept letting that happen, my time would be different than your time. But go back before we had computers and phones and all those other things. How would we have been able to establish consistent times? And what this article is suggesting is, well, they would just know when the sun's straight above, that would be about noon, and they would try to adjust the day based on that. There was no set standard, and there was no way to measure that. So we'll look at some pictures in just a moment. So this is a picture from around that time that it was talking about, 1883. This is the United States. You can see a plus and minus at the top there, and if you see those vertical lines on the screen, basically in the same places that the time zones are divided up today. Now we've pretty much got Eastern Time Zone from Indiana-Illinois border all the way to the coast, but you can see based on what the railroads were doing at that time, saying, okay, if I'm in Ohio and I'm going to the very east coast up in Maine, I need to subtract time. So I'm actually going backwards. So it's, instead of being 6, when I cross that border, it's going to be 7 already, if I said that right. And going forward, we know that we lose time. Continuing on in that same article, one of the first reported incidents, talking about incidents with inconsistent timing, which brought about a change in how time was organized on the railways, in the United States occurred in New England in August 1853. I'm positive nobody here was living at that time. Two trains were heading towards each other on the same track, and they collided as the train guards had different times on their watches, the incident resulting in the death of 14 passengers. Railway schedules were coordinated in New England shortly after this incident. Numerous other collisions led to the setting up of the General Time Convention, a committee of railway companies to agree on scheduling. So again, the same thing happens. Just because, remember, there's no computers, there's no nuclear clocks that people can always look back on. Even when things were working very well in one city, they weren't working consistently the same exact way in another city. Everybody could be synced up in Illinois, but if everybody's not synced up with the exact same time in Pennsylvania, and they think that they can get to Ohio at the same time, and one's just ahead of the other one, there will be collisions. They couldn't help it. And that also helped. So there was more of the standard time zone that we see today. Eastern time zone going from the border of Illinois and Indiana over to the coast. Central time zone from almost the dividing line there of Montana and Colorado, Kansas, over to that same point. Mountain time, area where Katie lives, Salt Lake City, Utah, Denver, Colorado, all those places, and then Pacific time zone there. So again, all these things came about originally because of train travel, people trying to go from one side of the country to another and trying to figure out how we were going to meet up with people at the right time. So again, timing is very important in this story. A little bit more history fact. Interesting, I wanted to look at why these time zones were divided up the way that they were. And going back into this article here, it starts off, it says the radius, diameter, and circumference, talking about the Earth. It says the radius of the Earth, and that's going all the way around it, the radius of the Earth at the equator is 3,963 miles, according to NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center. However, the Earth is not quite a sphere. The planet's rotation causes it to bulge at the equator. Earth's polar radius is 3,950 miles. Again, I said that incorrectly. The radius would just be the single branch from the absolute center to the outer edge there. So what they're saying is the Earth, we think they have a perfect circle. It's not perfect. Our Earth is more like this. It's squished out on the equator. And so there's a difference in mileage there. But using those measurements, the equatorial circumference of the Earth, the circumference is the full roundabout, Earth is about 24,901 miles. However, from pole to pole, if I say this right, meridional circumference, Earth is only 24,860 miles. This shape is caused by the flattening of the poles. It's also called an oblate spheroid. Don't want to care about all that thing, but look at the circumference of the Earth. We have a 24-hour day, and the Earth is nearly 24,000 miles around. And so that is why when we look at our time zones across the globe, when you go from point to point, they're almost right at about 1,000 miles apart. Not always, because it just depends on where the population centers are, but interesting things to think about. Why we divided up time zones that way, and how the Earth spins on its axis. So let's look at some things here. So why can't we feel the Earth spin? One more article for you. The Earth spins on its axis once every 24 hours in a day. At Earth's equator, the speed of the Earth's spin is about 1,000 miles per hour. So I didn't mention this earlier. This is what I was talking about. If the Earth spins around at 1,000 miles an hour, and the Earth is 24,900 miles around, that's why we get those time zones that are about 1,000 miles across. The day-night has carried, that's the time from this morning through tonight and then back tomorrow morning, has carried you around in a grand circle under the stars every day of your life, yet you don't feel the Earth spinning. And they go on to talk about why we don't feel the spinning, and just because everything's moving with the Earth at that same speed, and it's a big place. So, question today for us to think about. How does that speed factor into our time zones? And we just talked about that, Pacific, Mountain, Central, and Eastern, all about that same distance. It was going on to Google Earth, or Google Maps here. If you measure from where I've got a marker there, right on the edge of the ocean there, outside of Boston, I believe that is, you measure that blue line, it's just about 1,044 miles there. And again, we go back and we look at our time zones, that's almost that same dividing line. The other one that I show on there as an example is not quite as good. I was trying to go from that same point, that dividing line between Illinois and Indiana, and then really they show the time zone stopping just on the western or the eastern side of Colorado, which would have also been close to about that. But the measurement that I have there is about, I think if I can see it correctly, is about 956 miles. So again, just kind of making this story. So to the story of my backyard there, we started that and we're looking at it. The orange that you see on side there, the railroad engines on the track that run in my backyard and through Jeffersonville and all those places that you can see those orange lines, Wilmington, New Vienna, Greenfield, Washington Courthouse, Springfield, Columbus, all those places in orange are owned by the Indiana and Ohio Railroads. And they are actually owned by a larger railroad called the Genesee in Wyoming. I don't know if it shows up well behind me, but you can see a bunch of other gray lines there. Those are all the other railroads that are across the states, too, and we're not really looking at them. So if you wanted to see what those trains look like in really good detail there, that's what those locomotives look like that drive behind my house pretty much once or twice a day. So we're trying to catch a train. Timing involves paying attention. We've all seen these things in our lives. Stop, look, and listen. That's one of the things that they'll tell you in driver's education classes. They talk about that, even driving your car for the most part. So when you stop and you look at these signs here, when you first see that orange sign that has the railroad on it, orange or yellow-orange there, it's just telling you, okay, as you're driving along, you're going to be coming up on a place where there is a railroad track. You need to be on the lookout. Because as we talked about with our senses, listen with your ears, do you hear horns, use your eyes, do you see a train, and if you see a track, stop and make sure there's nothing coming on it. When you see the white sign that says railroad crossing, we all know what that is. That means you're getting ready to cross over where the rail connects with your road. That's why it's got that sign, it's such a great visual sign there. Saying, okay, here, if you go past this sign, you're probably going to run into something. And then with our engineers around the country, they've come up with these signs to say, people are often not paying attention. People are often in conversation or they're distracted on their phones or something. Let's actually put something that'll put a gate down so if they forget to pay attention to these flashing lights and they forget to pay attention to their getting ready to cross a railroad, then we'll put this gate down and say, hey, you got to stop here because you're about to get hit by something that's not going to give up on you. So again, back to our idea of timing, it's all those things. There was one time our Katie, James, Rachel, and I were down, and I think we were in Virginia. We were going down this big sweeping curve, and I think I probably even told this story before. I heard the train. We could see the train beside us for quite a while, and we were enjoying taking a look at it as we were going along. But then suddenly that road swept up and crossed the track with almost without any warning at all. And so even with all these warnings, I saw the railroad sign, I saw the white crossing sign, and I knew we were right by the tracks. But the road took such a sudden change that I had to put on the brakes immediately, and that train went right by us. So again, even with all these sensory things that are telling me, hey, be careful, I still almost got us into a bad spot. So timing is very important. So as we transition over to the spiritual side of looking at this idea of catching the train, we've got a note here that says, catching the train spiritually, waiting for the master. One of the things we didn't talk so much about was the history of waiting for trains. People would often go to stations and they would make sure that they were there in order to get on the train because it was often hard to get there. Often took sometimes half hour, hour, 2 hours, or even half a day to get to where the trains were because people were so spread out. And they just had horses or buggies and maybe not even that in order to get there. So they had to make sure that their timing was lined up with where that train was. And that train wasn't going to stick around there for very long. With regard to spiritual things, some passages that we may be familiar with, Isaiah 55:6-7 says, seek the Lord while he may be found. So we're not going to go looking for God when we can't find him. People were not going to go looking for trains if they knew they weren't going to be there. Corwin used to be a train station. People used to come here for miles around to get on the train in Corwin, but we know that that track has been gone since the early 80s. There's nothing there anymore, not even a rail at all. So there's no way that people could get on that. If people waited till now to say, I'm going to go over to Corwin and catch a train, it's too late. That train's done gone. It's not going to be found there again. Continuing on, call upon him while he is near. Let the wicked forsake his ways and the unrighteous man his thoughts. So when we're wanting the righteous God to be available for us, we need to make sure that we're doing the things that are going to appease him. We can't go jumping on a train if we've got a horse with us. We can't get on a train with a horse unless there's some special arrangements there. And we certainly aren't going to get on the train if the train's not near. If the train is already left and we're 10 miles behind it and we see the smoke on the horizon, there's no way that we're going to catch it. It's too late. We've already missed it. And these kind of ideas go back to the stories about the virgins and the lamps and other places that we've heard lessons on before. And it says, let him return to the Lord, and he will have mercy on him and our God, and he will abundantly pardon. God does make a chance for us. He has, we'll get into the end of this conversation in just a moment. Staying in Isaiah chapter 40, verses 30 starting, even the youths shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall. But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. So we're trying to get to where God is. If we're focused on God, they are the ones that will be, that I have those words underlined. It may be a long distance, but we will keep walking and God will make sure that we get there. It'll be like we have this extra special power to continue on this journey to get to where he is at. Also in Isaiah 51, listen to me, you who follow after righteousness, and you who seek the Lord, look to the rock from which you were hewn. So again, we're trying to be on time for the master. We're trying to get on that quote-unquote train, if you will. I originally started thinking about doing the song that Rod Stewart had done years ago, The Train to Jordan. Didn't really like all the lyrics in there, but that was kind of one of the things that was driving me into the direction of this lesson here. But trying to make sure that you're ready for it, trying to be on that train and trying to be ready that you have everything in order. But this passage I've used before has looked to the rock from which you were hewn and to the hole in the pit that which you were dug. Look to Abraham, your father, and to Sarah who bore you. For I called him alone and blessed him and increased him. For the Lord will comfort Zion. He will comfort all her waste places. He will make her wilderness like Eden, and her desert like the garden of the Lord. Joy and gladness will be found in it. Thanksgiving and the voice of melody. So again, this important place to be, important train to catch, if you will. In Psalm, I have some small passages here. Psalm 17:5 says, uphold my steps in your paths that my footsteps may not slip. You know, one of the hardest things sometimes in the old days to try to get to or catch a train properly is to get up to it. They finally started making platforms that were almost even with the trains, but in the early places or in some of the small stations, it was hard to get up to it. the trains had to be up high because they had to get above where the water would flood, and they had to get up away from crops and travel of other vehicles and things like that, so they often had to build them up. Well, getting up to that platform sometimes was difficult. But as in Psalms there, it says, uphold my steps in your paths. So it's saying God has provided paths for us. We just want to have him help us along there, that our footsteps may not slip. So many movies I've seen as a kid, I remember people trying to run and catch a train, and they would run and jump, and they'd either miss the train, or their feet would slip, or whatever the case may be. We don't want to take a chance of missing that important ride, especially if that ride is to heaven. Psalms also in chapter 37:23 says, the steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delights in his ways. If we know the direction that we need to get to reach our destination, whatever travel means that may be, in this story it could be a train, and today's story may be an airplane or a taxi or whatever the case may be. But those steps, if we're following the guidelines of what God has said, we're going to get there on time. If the railroad back in the day would have said, I need you to be in Springfield, Ohio at 9 o'clock in the morning at this station, well, it would be up to me. If I wanted to get to wherever that train was going, I needed to get to Springfield at 9 o'clock or before then for sure in order to get my stuff on that train. So if we're paying attention to what our destination is, that train and getting on it is important. Psalms 119, direct my steps by your word and let no iniquity have dominion over me. Again, this idea of in order to be on time for their destination, to not get tripped up by some of the things that are around us, look to God's word, and he will help us to get to the places that he has reserved for us. Jeremiah 10:23 says, O Lord, I know the way of man is not in himself. It is not in man who walks to direct his own steps. So often, seems like most of my lessons have Jeremiah 10:23 in them at some point, just reminding us, if I have to rely on Roger to do this correctly, Roger is going to fail every time. And I could point my finger, and I could probably hear all of you say the same thing, and hopefully we would, because we know that we don't have what God expects out of us unless we do the things that he has in his word and we try to follow them carefully. So again, timing involves paying attention. We went back to our picture we had up here earlier, that stop, look, and listen. But as we think about spiritual things, I change that to stop, look, and think. What are we doing right now? What path are we on? What is our destination? Where are we trying to get to? What's most important to me? I heard a radio program the other day going back to something I think is very important for us to think about. And the speaker was talking about idols in our lives and how idols aren't the big pieces of stone that we read about in the Old Testament. It's not this piece of silver or piece of gold or piece of bronze that people were going to and worshiping and putting all their money and time and service into. It's everything else. My TV, and I've said this so many times before, my focus on family, my focus on doing fun things, my focus on staying late at work or money, whatever those things are, anything that's a detraction from where I'm trying to be becomes an idol. And it may not be a stone, it may not be a gold or bronze, but it's just as significant in God's eyes, and we need to be very careful of those things. So when it comes to trying to catch God, catch our destination to heaven, try to be on it and in place and seated, ready and reserved for the day of judgment, we need to be able to stop, think about our condition, look at what we are doing, and try to make changes in our lives if needed, but most of all, using our minds to think about those things. So waiting for that last train to eternity. Finally, I believe I've used this passage before too, but it's such an important one. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night. Just like I was looking out my window trying to catch that train at night, it was hard to see that train just from looking out that window. Except for the lights, except for the horns and the sounds of the train, it was hard to tell. And obviously I've gone to sleep many times like that. We don't hear about this so much anymore, but it used to be a time when you would lose things in your property regularly, and it would be a case just like this. A thief coming when they can't be seen, sneaking onto your property, taking things when you can't see them or you're not paying attention. And that's what 2 Peter 3 is saying here. The day of the Lord will come just like a person like that, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, the elements will melt with fervent heat, both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up. So all of the things that we see around us, I was talking about our senses earlier, all the things that they're used to seeing and feeling and touching will be gone. Therefore, since all these things will be dissolved, what manner of person ought you to be in holy conduct, in godliness, looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God? Just like that story that I was trying to paint there, we know we need to be someplace. We live maybe 100 years ago. We need to get there. The only way to get there is on train. So what do I need to do to be on that train with the things that I need in order to get to that destination? I need to be ready for it. I need to be prepared and have everything ready to go. The same is true with our trip to heaven if we want to go on that trip. Because of which the heavens will be dissolved, being on fire, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Nevertheless, we, according to his promise, look for a new heavens and a new earth which righteousness dwells. So the question I ask finally, are our bags packed and do we have our tickets? You know, catching the train does nothing if all you do is get on the train. If I want to go back out to Colorado, which was where I was born, a state that I love to go back to, if I wanted to go back out there and I managed to get on a train and I had on just a shirt and jeans, I would be unprepared. I wouldn't be able to stay warm. If I had no money with me, I wouldn't be able to have food, and all these things would be missing. If I want to take a trip and be safe and comfortable, I need to make sure that I have all those things with me. It's more true with our trip to heaven. Everything that we're doing right now is preparation. We are either taking things out of our bag and leaving it lying around the house, or we're constantly putting and making sure that they're ready to go, fresh and safe and stowed away in order for that trip to be reliable. And finally, do we have our ticket? A Christian has the ticket. They've been given that seal of the Spirit that we've been talking about on Wednesday nights. If you're not a Christian, that ticket is missing. You may have your family, you may have things in your mind in order, you may have the right destination in mind, but if you don't have that ticket, you won't be allowed on that train. And it's true for that way to heaven too. God expects us to do what he's asked of us in order to take this trip. And so this morning, as you think about these things, I encourage you to make sure that you have your preparation in order. I struggle with my own preparation. One thing that we didn't talk about, sometimes trying to catch a train, you may be on time. You may be in the right place at the right time, but there's always obstacles that we're facing. In the old days, it may have been a cart accident. Your horse may have had an issue. A wheel could have fallen off your cart trying to get there, or your buggy. Or maybe you just got lost. All those things can happen. So we need to be thinking about those things with regard to spiritual things. They can happen to us as well. So if you have a need at this time, please stand as we stand and sing.